This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 24th of June, 2021. And we're still near those all-time highs in the U.S. equity market. I guess the most interesting story there is a bit of divergence. We'll get to that in a moment. First up, we need to flag your webinar today, Ole, commodities webinar. Tell us about what you'll be covering besides commodities in general.
Yeah, well, we've been through a month of correction, which seems to be fading, at least in the energy space. So I'll just basically talk about the latest developments impacting the markets, some of the rotation we're seeing out of agricultural metal into energy, and just look ahead a little bit to key events coming up and what potentially could drive the price. So you can sign up by going into webinars.saxo. On that website, you can also find the replay, which will be available sometime tomorrow.
All right, we'll look forward to that. And as well, and then back to the markets, we've seen the NASDAQ a rush to a new high. We've seen the broader market, though, still just below the range highs. And if you look in various pockets, they're actually quite low. So, you know, something one might call value, some of the financials, transports down. So, Peter, I guess that's the most interesting divergence we're seeing and story we can pull out of this market as we're awaiting earnings season.
Yeah, we're waiting for the earnings, so we'll talk about that actually later in this podcast. But you're right, some of that value stocks have come down to earth, and you know, the interest rates still stuck on the 10-year in the US at 1.5%. So we're seeing on slide four, you can see the bubble stocks, crypto, everything that's just spells of technology, battery, the mega caps, which is an overweight on technology companies, are all doing well yesterday, and that's a continuation. Second straight session of those gaining. And then China's consumer and technology basket popped up on our list as the best performer yesterday. And so it seems like they have turned a corner. At least we're not making new lows. And I'm still betting on China to do much more stimulus of their economy when we get later into the year on the other side of the 100-year anniversary. And we had big news on Evergrande today. They have a big loan coming due here in 4 days, and they apparently have raised the money to pay off that. So that's you know improving sentiment in China today and also yesterday. So that's a healthy thing, but it still shows you that there's a lot of stress in the system.
All right, and one place we're not seeing a lot of stress yet, at least, is in the U.S. Fixed income market, where there's so much debate about, you know, whether what we're seeing in some of the pricing is any reflection of a free market, because we have these one-off issues that we're sort of, you know, waiting not so patiently to have unwound. This drawdown of the U.S. Treasury's general account, we've talked about endlessly, that process should be complete in a little over a month. And there's argument, there was a prominent Deutsche Bank credit person, I believe it was, yesterday, discussing that you were just not getting the pricing signals here, and things could change once that process is complete. But just for the day-to-day, for the auctions, Althea, you're on the call on fixed income. We saw what yesterday in the five-year auction, which gets a bit more interesting than the two-year when you start going a little bit further out the curve.
Yeah, absolutely, John. Yesterday, we've seen weak demand at the 5 years auction. The bid to cover was well below the five-year average, but in line with the average on the past 5 year options. So basically, what is happening here is that demand is weaker for, you know, like the actions that the Federal Reserve has taken on the front part of the yield curve, and now we are leading with weak demand on the 7 year. Note that we know it's already suffering from below average demand, as you can see on slide five on the bottom left. But today we have the 7 year auction, and the only thing that the other thing that worries me besides demand is also the fact that we have seen inflation expectations rebounding. And in slide seven, you have the US dollar inflation zero coupon swap and the 5 year break even, and they both rose above the levels that we have seen pre FOMC. And the belly of the curve, especially the 7 year notes, is particularly sensitive to inflation expectations. So even though they are still below the peak we have seen in May, I'm starting to wonder whether weak demand plus rising inflation expectations might create a scenario of a sell-off such we have seen in February.
All right, just to point out, you said on slide 7, you meant slide 5. I think you were looking at the 7-year label on that chart there. So it's that rightmost chart on slide 5, looking at the break-evens versus the underlying curve there of the U.S. Zero coupon. And then on the 2-year, because we have seen the market, you know, pulling in that pricing of a Fed rate hike within the next 2 years, the yield has gone up sort of above where Fed funds are for, yeah, you know, with this reaction to the FOMC. This is quite a big move as that, yeah, as that horizon pulls into view.
I think, John, what is interesting on the 2 year yields is that they rose above 0.25% and stabilized above this level yesterday after the 5-year auction. So something is moving in the front part of the yield curve. But my take here wants to be that the 2 year yields are still well below where they should be. Especially when we compare that to the euro dollar market. And the 2 year yield, if they were pricing an interest rate hike next year in 2022, they should be around 0.5%. So there is still room for yields to rise here and the front part of the yield curve to shift higher and flattening further, the yield curve to flatten further.
Yeah, we had a pretty solid move higher in expectations yesterday on the back of some Fed comments. Fed's Kaplan saying he's in favor of the 2022 rate hike and tapering sooner rather than later. So clearly he's on the hawkish end of the spectrum, whereas a different speaker, Rosengren, sounds like he's pretty much on the consensus with Powell that this is going to prove transitory and we need to wait and see. But the market pricing pressing a little bit higher here on these rate hike expectations. And we saw yesterday another central bank actually hiking rates, and that's the Czech Central Bank, the day after Hungary did so. So we have quite a Central Eastern European currency theme going here. Pretty solid reaction as the guidance was quite hawkish as well. It couldn't rule out whether they might need to hike at every meeting in the 4 remaining meetings for this year. So you can see on slide 7 that Eurocheck has gone down right towards those lows of the cycle. Broader FX on slide 8, looking at the trends, the dollar trend still barely sticking here, or not barely, but still sticking reasonably here after a pretty sharp consolidation, but the move was so large that it's able to absorb that without the trend reverting back towards zero. You can see the other trends all flattening out because we've gone from some mixed strength to mixed weakness across the board. Sterling sticking out a little bit. We have a bit of a bid there into today's Bank of England meeting, where the market's looking for a tapering message and something that sort of reminds us of the theme that the central banks globally, whether it's the Fed, whether it's Central Eastern Europe, is moving slowly towards a tightening regime. And then I've just highlighted the dollar yen chart because we did pip just those new highs there above 111. I'm not seeing a lot of support for that move higher unless the longer U.S. yields start to pick up more aggressively, although you'd need to see it sell off through that channel that I've identified on the chart there on slide 8 to suggest that there's any significant weakness. Yen strength just seems to require sort of, you know, risk off, lower yields, safe haven seeking, and I would say weak EM as well. So watching that, we've seen a turnaround in the yen crosses overnight after the big bounce back from the post FOMC reaction. All right, let's get into some other topics that are pretty interesting. So Peter, I'm not sure what your intent is. You're here on slide 9. You're talking about the average inflation targeting regime that the Fed has supposedly moved into here. What's your perspective?
No, it's just you know, public service. We, you know, we have a lot of professional clients and investors looking or listening to us on this podcast, but we certainly also have a lot of ordinary private investors that are just curious about the market. And some time to time we get this these, you know, can you explain things more fully, because some of the concepts we're talking about do require some background knowledge. And we're talking a lot about average inflation targeting. It's the official target policy of the FOMC now, and I've shown this chart actually before in some of my presentations. It's just to give you an idea that the whole concept that they are talking so often about is that when you undershoot inflation and you have an average inflation target, you should be willing to also overshoot it. And the first mentioning in academic papers of this average inflation target goes many years back, and the trajectory, the 2% trajectory, was deviated from around 2012, and that's why I have drawn the light blue line there from 2012, because that was where inflation began to really seriously undershoot, and it has come up more significantly. It's just to give you an idea of what's the mindset of the FOMC and how does this average inflation targeting and why they will probably be have more loose monetary policy for longer.
And why they'll need to continue the negative real rates policy if they ever hope to deleverage the real level of debt in the economy, so this so-called financial repression. And then some thoughts on one of the interesting angles on inflation, the so-called Amazon effect you have there on slide 10.
Yeah, I talked very briefly about it and recommended people to read the FT article about it. So the Amazon effect is basically that Amazon 2 years ago started hiking their minimum wage for workers at their fulfillment centers to $15 per hour. And in some districts in the US, it's actually $20 and $22. And a lot of companies, including McDonald's and Walmart, have been forced to follow suit, and a lot of small businesses as well. So And I looked into the different subcomponents of hourly earnings, and the one you see here on slide 10, on the slide to the right, is for production workers and non-supervisory people. And the annualized wage growth is actually now 5.5% since December 2019. And just to keep things in perspective, that's the highest annualized wage growth for this type of workers since the late 1970s. And I'm showing on the left-hand side on slide 10, a chart from the St. Louis Fed where they show the historic relationship between wage growth and inflation. And I'm still leaning in the inflation camp, and I think the wage growth is something that is probably being overlooked. And I think this Amazon effect cannot be described, the whole effect of why we have these odd dynamics in the labor market right now with shortages. But I think it's definitely worth watching, because the corporate sector de facto is actually increasing wages despite the U.S. government is not able to do so. So this is definitely something to watch for, future inflation.
And also for impact, if you're talking about wages, of course, I would imagine as well for corporate earnings.
Yes.
If they're mentioning that in the earnings reports, starting perhaps with the next round here, that could be interesting as well. Ola, we have gold, which... I think for many of us is starting to bore us and grate on us a little bit here with its price action still embedded below $1,800. What are you looking for the dam to break to get something either going for a further consolidation lower or to get the rally going again?
Well, that's a very good question, John. And that's also the question I'm asking on slide 12, where I've basically put in gold, the dollar, and the real yield, 10-year U.S. real yields, because we can all see how they after the Fed announcement, they all concertedly went gold went down, the other two went higher. I inverted the yield and the dollar just to get the direction. And since then, as you can see, the blue line, as Tia talked about, real yields have started to recover as break even, so inflation expectations are moving up. Dollar also just starting to at least has to move off the lows, but gold is just, as you say, completely just trading sideways. We had an attempt yesterday, ran into the sand just below 1800, and I think apart from these two, the dollar, I think, is right now is probably the main one, because it has reduced the general investment appetite in commodities. We've seen this rotation out of metals and agriculturals towards the energy space, and we've seen reduced short selling in the gold market. And for those shorts to start to reconsider, I think at this stage we need to break at least back above 1820. So at this moment, probably not, shouldn't brought the slide, because as you say, it's not really much going on. But I think just for investors who are watching it closely, I think many will just be sitting on the fence until we at least have a go at 1820.
Okie doke. And on for equity traders, we have a couple of interesting earning reports today, some pretty big marquee names. Any big expectations around these Nike and FedEx reports today, Peter?
Yeah, so they both report after the market close, so we won't see the reaction until tomorrow's session. But some of the key points here is for Nike that very strong revenue growth expected. Obviously, not very interesting on a year-to-year basis. It's more in the quarter-on-quarter, but that looks pretty solid. I think the market will watch very much these growth margins, but also the operating margins, because we know Nike have emptied their inventories, doing less promotions, so margins should improve. But then on the other hand, you also have these weight pressures that you talked about, and you and I talked about, John. So as you said, I mean, could be that also wages on workers in retail stores are expanding. So I think it's going to be key over the coming quarters to watch these input costs also now on the wage side and not only on the commodity side of things. And then FedEx, more interesting, of course, from the macro side, revenue growth expected to be 23% year-over-year, also quite strong on the quarter-on-quarter basis. But I think the outlook for logistics cost last mile delivery is something I'll be watching. And then finally, I have to mention that we got a news as we started the just before we started the podcast that Visa is acquiring a Swedish company called Tind, which is running this European open banking platform, which is an API that pulls in data from, I think, 3,000 different financial institutions. So you can create banking and financial services very easy. So this is, I think, a sign that Visa, you know, is trying to look for ways to, you know, continue their growth journey, because the payment space is getting and credit card space is getting extremely crowded with all the new players. And I think this is a very interesting take. So that's something I'll be looking forward to and watching in the future.
Okay. The thing we're also looking forward to today is the Bank of England. A bit more anticipation around this one, because again, we're getting at this inflection point where we're talking about more distinct and clear messages on tapering and tightening, slowly starting the tightening policy. So there's anticipation that they could bring forward a higher profile to the tapering message, and the market will be looking for any hints at the anticipated timing of liftoff. They looked like they're in the forward curve slightly ahead of the Fed. The market is pricing them to hike slightly before the Fed does sometime next year. I'll tell you, I'm looking at your gilt chart for 10 years on slide 11, a bit like the U.S. 10-year, really embedded in the range here. Are you expecting much drama out there for the 10 years?
No, John. I think that we will see for most of the summer gilts yields trading range bound between 0.70% and 0.85%. And we really need to have some direction there, but I don't think that it will come at this monetary policy meeting just because of the Delta variant. And also another thing is that gilts are very much correlated to US treasuries. So if we don't see US treasuries moving forward, then gilts are going to stay where we see them today.
Okay, a little bit more drama potentially on the FX side of thing. We saw cable, so sterling versus the dollar, touching that 1.40 level, huge level on the charts. So we'll be looking at that for the relative messages from the Bank of England. We should be expecting the Bank of England's chief economist, Haldane, who's at his last meeting today, to dissent and vote for a rate hike. But that's, again, largely expected. So quite a bit at stake for maybe a bit more for FX traders as we see that meeting today. And that takes the economic calendar on slide 14. There's a ridiculous number of Fed speakers out. I think we're getting to the point of diminishing returns. It's quite obvious we have quite a diverse set of forecasts and positions on what's going on and what is likely to unfold. So I would expect sort of declining interest in some of these people's positions, especially because it's the regional Fed presidents and not one of the major influential policy speakers for the most part. So watch the weekly claims, the seven-year auction, as that's indicated earlier. And we have a Mexican central bank meeting tonight with no rate hike expected. And tomorrow's, I think, maybe key test for a lot of the post-FOMC reaction points is that PC inflation data, also for the US dollar. And now that it's sort of gone half semicircle from a big rally to sort of consolidating about half of those gains as we look into that inflation figure tomorrow. Stay careful out there. We'll be back tomorrow to see where things stand with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email marketcall@saxobank.com.